Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to Inside China Basin, your San Francisco Giants three times a week podcast on thesportsvirus.com and now on KNBR.com, featuring Giants players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
And San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea is our regular guest, too.
Bumgarner, he's a god, isn't he? He does all these things that no other humans do.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by Townsend Restaurant and Bakery, capturing the spirit of San Francisco. Today we have two guests from AT&T Park in San Francisco, Rock Cavaco, reporter for Masson.com in Baltimore, and Jeff Idelson, the president of the National Baseball Hall of Fame. We'll start with Rock Cavaco. Rock, the Orioles here, the Giants, also a first-place team. Both teams kind of hanging on at the top of their divisions right now. So when you took a look at this series, what did you see? Because, you know, the Orioles are a team that they played so well at home but not so great on the road, and they did well in that first game against the Giants.
Right, well, that was one of the first things I thought about was just the struggles on the road. I mean, they lost the first three to Oakland, the last-place team, and all of a sudden you come playing a first-place team. I was wondering how it's going to turn out. Also, you just the first thing I think that jumps out at anybody is you look at the Giants pitching. It just looks ridiculous. Even like Matt Cain, who I know isn't pitching at the level he was in previous years, he's still very good. And he's still an ace on a lot of staffs. And then you've got, you know, Madison Bumgarner, whose numbers are just ridiculous. And you have Cueto tomorrow. I mean, you know, it's great pitching usually is going to get the best of great hitting. So, you know, you figure, you look at that and you say, man, the Giants are going to have the advantage. Yet the Orioles' rotation is so much better now. They had seven straight quality starts before Bundy last night, and he came out after 5 2/3. If Buck had let him go one more hitter, he gets a quality start. So the rotation is doing a lot better at least. But still, with the Giants, they're always going to be in it because of that rotation. And you know, I was talking with Buck Showalter about that, and he kind of marvels at it. He's like, it's a huge challenge every night. They're going to be in every game, you'd think, no matter how the offense is doing, because of that rotation.
And the offense is struggling right now. And for the Orioles, I mean, they have the capability of hitting the big home run, the big three-run homer. And I know Camden Yards is conducive to that. But still, I mean, there are guys on this team. It doesn't matter where they're playing. They've got big-time power. How much do the Orioles rely on that? And is it sometimes a crutch that you know that you can have that, you know, you have to get the base runners on for those guys?
Yeah, I think maybe sometimes they rely on it to a fault because, and you'll hear fans say that all the time, they still can't play small ball. They can't manufacture runs. And they rely so much on the home run, you live and die by it. And when they go in these prolonged team slumps, which we just saw until that last game in Oakland, where they couldn't score to save their lives, three runs in the first three games of that series, that's where you always come back to, is they're not manufacturing and guys are swinging for the fences and maybe pressing. So, you know, they've worked to improve in that area. They've got a higher on-base percentage than they've had in years. They usually rank near or at the bottom in the major leagues and on-base percentage. They've improved in that area a lot. But still, they do rely heavily on the long ball. And when they don't have that, they struggle. But you can see they can strike at any time. And like last night's game, Trumbo and Davis homered in the same game for the first time since June 26th. So it's been a little while, but it looks like that heart of the order is heating up again. And that's why Buck keeps running him out there. Fans are like, you know, Davis is struggling so much, you got to sit him. Or Trumbo was slumping since the break. But you know they can break out at any minute. And managers still have to account for that. Even if Davis is struggling as much as he was, he's a big left-handed bat in the middle of the lineup. And that's going to dictate what they do with their bullpen, moves the managers make. It's the same with Trumbo. Even if he's slowing down a little bit, you still have to account for him, and Buck's going to keep running him out there and trust the track record.
Trumbo hit a tremendous home run. Who are the leaders in the clubhouse on this team?
You know, there are a few, but I think really Adam Jones has wanted to be the leader since he first showed up, and there was a time when they were like, you know, kid, not yet. We've got some other veterans. It's not your time yet. He really is, I would say, more than anybody else at this point. You know, he leads by example, and he's very vocal. I mean, the guy plays every day. He plays hurt. He's banged up all the time. I'll have people tweet me and say, is Adam hurt? I'm like, yes, every part of Adam's body hurts, and he still runs out there, and he's still very productive, and he's the guy who will speak up. He's really become one of the faces of the franchise. He's a big-time leader, but they have other guys, including a J.J. Hardy, who's a leader of that infield, and Darren O'Day, who just went on the DL again. He's clearly the leader of that bullpen. So you have guys like that kind of broken off. Matt Wieters is more of a quiet leader, but still a veteran who's respected. And I think when you're a catcher, you're naturally supposed to lead to a degree. So they have a couple guys who you could say are leaders, but certainly I think more than anybody else, if you ask anyone, who's that one guy that would say Adam Jones first and foremost?
You mentioned the bullpen, and we saw Zach Britton in the first game of this series on Friday, and he's just unbelievable. I mean, the numbers are incredible. That sinker, I don't know that I've seen anything like that lately. I mean, some guys throw a good sinker, but that just looks so dominating.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, there's talk about, is that the best pitch we've seen since, you know, Mariano's cutter? And it may be. It's a dominant pitch. And, you know, we talked to Zach about it. And when he was starting, he didn't throw it as much. He was throwing a lot of the four-seam fastball and whatever. And he wasn't able to command it the way he can now. And once Dom Chidi, the bullpen coach, Dave Wallace, a pitching coach, showed up and started working with him, he was able to do more with it. I remember watching him throw side sessions in spring training where he would throw it to a plate that had strings across it to work on keeping the ball down. And it's just, it's nasty. It's 97, 98 with heavy sink. And guys don't just swing and miss. They miss by a lot. And you see when opposing players are marveling at it, it tells you just how good a pitch that is. And yet when he needs to throw it for a strike, he can do that. He said, hey, in the minors, I used to just bounce it all the time and guys would swing. You come up here, they'll make you throw it for a strike. So he can do that, and then, of course, guys have to offer at it, and then you can go ahead and bounce it. It's a remarkable pitch, and it's getting to the point now where it's not just a great season. He's starting to have a historic season. And if there, you know, should he be in the Cy Young conversation? Absolutely he should be. I'm not saying he's going to win it, but how do you have Cy Young talk and not include a guy's 36 for 36 in saves as an 0.55 ERA right now?
Oh, I agree with you. And, you know, you think about a pitch like that, like the sinker, maybe that comes into play more for pitchers because he's been so successful. I mean, we saw that with the splitter, and then lately it's been more the cutter. But when you look at Britton and the way he's throwing that, maybe more pitchers should say, hey, I need to throw that two-seamer, that sinker.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, with him now not being in the rotation, it's easier. You can go ahead and really rely on that heavily on that one pitch, try and mix in another one. But you can just keep throwing that one. And he was, even in spring training, the first inter-squad game, he dominated that ending pitch to the point where Buck was kind of shaking his head, like, maybe we should send him home right now. He's ready. Let's just send him home and bring him back later. It was that nasty. And they brought some kids from minor league camp to fill out the roster. And some poor kid who's one of their better prospects struck out on three pitches and walked back to the bench and was like, hey, kid, welcome to the show. You're going to be seeing that a lot if you ever make it up here. So Britton has really been on top of his game since the early days of camp.
We'll have more with Rock Cabanco covering the Orioles for Masson in Baltimore right after this. The next time you're on your way to a Giants game, stop by Town's End Restaurant and Bakery for breakfast and lunch Tuesday through Friday, 7:30 a.m. to 2 p.m., or for brunch on the weekend from 8 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. Celebrating their 26th year, family-run and cozy, Town's End Restaurant and Bakery captures the spirit of San Francisco with homemade sourdough English muffins, scones, and breads. They're serving cage-free Petaluma eggs and have been organic since well before organic became mainstream. Consistent quality, 4-star Google reviews, and great service from loyal employees that have been there for over 20 years. Town's End Restaurant and Bakery, a Buster Posey home run away from AT&T Park, right along the Embarcadero at 2 Townsend Street in San Francisco. Now, you mentioned Buck Showalter, and he's such a cerebral manager. And you got Dave Wallace as the pitching coach, like you mentioned. You compare that with the Giants. They have Bruce Bochy. They've got Dave Rigetti. There's so much experience in these dugouts. What do you think that means when it comes crunch time like now?
I think it means a lot just because they can fall back on their experiences. And in the Orioles' case, not to take a shot at past managers, but they kind of went through a stretch where a lot of guys are getting their first opportunities. Ali Mazzilli, a Sam Perlazzo, a Dave Tremblay, guys like that. And Juan Samuel was an interim manager. Buck brought instant credibility because he had that track record. He commanded respect. And you had guys like Adam saying, all of a sudden, we had to be on our toes. And I'm thinking, I'm sure past managers were like, well, you weren't on your toes for us. Thanks a lot, guys. But it's just a natural inclination that there was a kind of a losing culture in Baltimore, 14 straight seasons of it. And, you know, it was a really proud franchise at one time. And, you know, they'd fallen on hard times. It was sad to see. And there was a reputation Baltimore wasn't a good place to play anymore. Buck shows up and it was instant credibility. And then it became a place where players wanted to come again. And right now he says he thinks he's got the best coaching staff he's ever had. And that includes having Dom Chidi in the bullpen, which is a luxury. He could be a pitching coach for a lot of teams. And yet here he is as a bullpen guy. He's like a second pitching coach for them. Wayne Kirby's as good an outfield instructor as you're going to see. And Bobby Dickerson does a great job with the infielders. He's a third base coach. So it's a really good unit. So, you know, this Buck loves the staff and they're veteran guys and guys who have had success in other places. So I just think it meant so much to this franchise. One of the best things they've ever done was hiring Buck Showalter. Whether you like him or not, whether you agree with everything he does or not, nobody's going to. it's still what he, to a reverse of losing culture is one of the hardest thing to do in sports. And he had a huge part in that. And again, brought credibility. And really, he is the face of the franchise. And he hates hearing that, but he is the face of the franchise. You think of the Orioles, you think of Buck Showalter in the dugout. And I don't know if there's been a more popular manager except for Earl Weaver since Buck. So, I mean, you know, he's meant everything to this franchise.
Well, I think it's so important when you make your decisions, you make them with conviction. You don't look back. And you have to really believe that the decisions that you're making, they're right no matter how you're questioned. And it was funny because we were having a little discussion in the dugout. One of the reporters was asking Buck about the time when he was managing the Diamondbacks when he walked Barry Bonds with the bases loaded. And he still to this day says, hey, we won the game. You just see that confidence in him looking back on that decision. How do you think that fits into his whole persona?
Big time, because he is a very confident guy. And he also will freely say, look, if a move doesn't work, that doesn't mean it was a bad decision. You know, if that had happened where you walk Bonds, you end up the next batter hits a walk-off, he still thinks at the time it was the right move. They just don't always work. And you have to have a lot of confidence and security to be able to do that, not feel like if I'm wrong here or this doesn't work, it could cost me my job or worry about second guessing. He doesn't do that. He's going to do what he thinks is right. And if it doesn't work out, he still thinks it was the right move. And he always tells a story when he was managing somewhere else and he met with all the minor league coaches. And the third base coach for the AAA affiliate said, hey, I had a great year. I didn't have a single guy thrown out all year. And Buck said, then you had a bad year. That means you never took a chance. You played it too safe. Sometimes guys get thrown out and it's still the right move. So, you know, he's trying to instill that kind of confidence in guys in the minors. Maybe it's easier when you're Buck to have that kind of confidence. But still, that's a prime example of Buck saying, hey, if it doesn't work, stand by what you did. It was still the right decision.
To finish up, I know this player isn't on the Orioles, but I'm sure you have an opinion about Alex Rodriguez, who played his last game as a Yankee on Friday. But we'll see about whether or not that was his last game as a major leaguer. What's your take on what might be the future for Alex Rodriguez?
I don't believe for a second that he's retiring. And I don't know if he ever used that word. He's just not playing right now. I think the door is left wide open if somebody else wants to sign him. And I've talked to people and say, oh, no, who would sign him? Some team that wants a bat down the stretch would go ahead and take a chance on him, absolutely. I mean, there's still a little bit left, I think, in the tank, and I don't sense at all that he's done playing, that he wants to walk away, that he's burnt out or anything like that. He will resurface somewhere. I don't know where. I don't know who would do it. I don't know what's the right fit. But somewhere he is going to go ahead and resurface. He is not done yet.
All right, Rock. Hey, thanks so much for the time. Great seeing you here in San Francisco, and enjoy the weekend.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
That's Orioles beat reporter Rock Kabatko for Masson.com. Coming up, we'll hear from Jeff Idelson, the president of the National Baseball Hall of Fame, right after this. The Bay Area is a playground for all levels of cyclists, and the best bicycle store around is Breaking Away Bicycles in Marin. Established in 2005, Breaking Away Bicycles was built on a passion for getting people outside. Donna started the shop after 19 years managing Angel Island, watching kids and adults enjoy riding around the beautiful landscape. She left the corporate world to help more folks get on bikes. Rich joined the team and dedicated his life to being constantly covered in grease. He'll get you rolling no matter what. So stop by Breaking Away Bikes in the heart of Ross at 7 Ross Common, or check them out on the web, www.breakingawaybikes.com. Now let's get to the conversation with Jeff Idelson, the president of the National Baseball Hall of Fame. Jeff, I saw you talking there with Brandon Crawford, and I know that his bat from the 7-hit game went to the Hall of Fame. First of all, tell us about the bat. Did it have like 7 different marks on it from all those hits, right in the right spot in the bat, the sweet spot?
Well, they were all close to the same place because he was so locked in for that game, but it was impressive to see. I was there. I was actually there for the first half of the game, but I had flown in red eye from Seattle from Ken Griffey Jr.'s number retirement and went home. But at least I got to see part of history.
Yeah, I mean, that was incredible to get 7 hits like that. So what happens to the artifacts like that? How do you get the bat, you know, or if it's a baseball, whatever it is, how do you go about your business of getting it and what happens with it?
Well, in a case like that, Joe, when we're not there, we'll go through the team PR office. And, you know, Matt Chisholm was with the club, and we talked to him about seeing if Brandon would be willing to donate it when he was done with it, when all the hits were out of it, and then, you know, or even if when it broke. But he wanted to give it up right away. I even asked him today if he wanted it back. He said no. He goes, I'm doing well with the next one. And then it came to Cooperstown a few days later.
Well, it's been pretty busy lately because you had Ichiro with his 3,000th hit. What happened with that? How does the Hall of Fame acknowledge the 3,000 hits?
Well, Ichiro was incredibly generous, as he's been all 16 years he's been in the majors with us, and he donated his complete uniform to the Hall of Fame. So I was in Miami and was able to accept that from him, and it will all be on display this coming week on Wednesday.
So you've been a busy guy, and you know, including the induction this year, which was really special. I mean, Ken Griffey Jr. and Mike Piazza, their speeches were so heartfelt, a lot of emotion. Did you feel like there was more of that this year maybe than in recent years?
You tend to see that, Joe, more so when guys are really huge family guys. And there's emotion every year. I mean, as I told these guys when in the spring, and, you know, Junior's, I'm not going to cry. I said, Junior, like, if Nolan Ryan cried, you're going to cry. So it took Junior about 18 seconds into his speech, and Mike was not far behind. But both of these guys, family was so important to them. And I think as they looked into the crowd and saw their parents right in front of them, it really hit home how meaningful the moment was.
I was going to say, what's it like for you and the Hall of Fame staff when you get to know these players and the families? I mean, we saw Mike Piazza's dad out there crying. We saw Ken Griffey Sr., and he looked so emotional. You know, when you get to know them and what it means to them, how does it feel for you and everybody on your staff?
Well, you know, for us that are working at the Hall of Fame now, we're the caretakers now, and to be a part of the history is wonderful. But as you get to know these guys, and, you know, Junior I knew a little bit, and Mike, I overlapped with both of them while I was still with the Yankees. It's a chance for them to it's exciting to be a part of it, and it's a chance for them to understand the enormity of it. And it never hits home until they're standing on stage with 50,000 people in front of them and 50 Hall of Famers behind them.
And it's fun to look at the dynamic there too, the contrast of a first overall pick in Ken Griffey Jr. and a guy who was taken in the 62nd round in Mike Piazza. So you realize that, you know, really it comes from different areas, Hall of Famers.
Absolutely. I mean, the dichotomy was never more pronounced than it was this year, Joe. You hit the nail on the head. You have Griffey was the number one pick in the country in 87. He's the first number one pick in the country to make it to the Hall of Fame. And then Piazza only had 43 guys drafted after him. I mean, he was the bottom of the barrel. He was a guy with a power, slow bat, and no position. And for the Dodgers to make him a catcher, for him to ascend all the way up, you had Ken Griffey Jr. who had to prove the scouts right, and Mike Piazza who had to prove the scouts wrong. Together they shared a stage in Cooperstown. It was pretty unusual.
More with Jeff Idelson, the president of the National Baseball Hall of Fame, after this. Hey, Giants fans, whether you're taking pictures of Little Leaguers or the pros, Tamron Lenses and Looking Glass Photo have the perfect lens for you. The award-winning Tamron 16-300mm all-in-one zoom is more versatile than your basic kit lens. With amazing Tamron quality and image stabilization, you'll never need to switch lenses again, whether they are sliding into home or making a spectacular catch at the wall. Your Tamron lens will catch them all. Tamron has lenses for all of your photographic needs, and you can get your Tamron lens at Looking Glass Photo in Berkeley. Contact them at www.lookingglassphoto.com. Tell us about the ceremony here in San Francisco. You're here as Gaylord Perry had a statue put up, and he was a Hall of Fame pitcher and a great Giant. What was the moment like here?
It was special. I mean, I'm so happy for Gaylord and his family, and the Giants have such a rich tradition of baseball history, and, you know, 5 Hall of Famers with statues now right here around the ballpark, AT&T, and for Gaylord and his family, it was a long time coming and so well-deserved. When you look at the enormity of his career, you don't really realize it, but, I mean, he's only one of 8 guys with more than 300 wins and 3,500 strikeouts. He was the first guy to win Cy Youngs in both leagues. 303 complete games, 1991 Hall of Fame inductee, incredibly richly deserved.
You know, you look at the great Hall of Famers that have played in San Francisco, you know, the Willie Mays of the world, Orlando Cepeda, those type of players, Willie McCovey, but there are all other players who, I was thinking about the other day, they ended their career here. You know, like a Steve Carlton was near the end of his career, and a Gary Carter played for the Giants. Randy Johnson got his 300th win with the Giants. It's kind of funny how they've passed into San Francisco.
Well, you know, to make it to the Hall of Fame, it's about the entirety of your career, not any one city. And, you know, for Randy to be able to pick up 300 wins here, you know, he probably would have made the Hall of Fame anyway, but it allows the Giants to be a part of his DNA, and it's special for the fans to be able to see that, and for Randy, I'm sure it was a very meaningful time.
And to finish up, what's new at the Hall of Fame as far as exhibits and what you see going on in the future, into 2017?
Well, a lot of new things going on now, Joe. We just opened up an exhibit called Whole New Ball Game in Cooperstown, which is 1970 to forward. All the great stories and dynasties of the last 50 years. We have an exhibit on the road called We Are Baseball that's touring around the country with an IMAX film as a partner. Very heavy in technology and virtual reality, and already starting to prepare for next year's induction.
All right, well, really appreciate the time, Jeff, and have a good time here in San Francisco. Enjoy this nice weather while we have it, because it'll probably be freezing in another day.
I'll take full advantage. Thank you.
That's Jeff Idelson, the president of the National Baseball Hall of Fame here in San Francisco at AT&T Park. Before we get finished, let's hear from Hall of Famer Gaylord Perry as he addressed the media on Friday.
It is a great honor, honor that I was wishing 4 years ago, but never thought I'd get it because it's just so hard to get a statue of you, you know. And I was, I signed with the Giants right out of high school, so my love has always been with the Giants. I greatly appreciate what they've done for me. My best pitch was not the fastball, so it was something that you threw, but you wouldn't throw to certain guys like Dick Allen or Cepeda when he went to St. Louis, Billy Williams of the Cubs. You just had to know when you're going to throw it.
How many times do you think you got checked by the umpire?
I started 40 games maybe a year and probably got checked 30 games each year. Yeah.
So. Never got caught?
Nope. They tried to get me, but they didn't get me.
So it's always basically a mystery then as to whether you threw it or not.
That's exactly right. That's what I wanted. Yep, you got that right. I was with the Giants when Don Drysdale was pitching against us. One guy come back out of the strike, and I said, it's on his belt today. Next guy come back, no, it's not. It's on his pants. Next guy, no, it's on his hat. They worried more about where he was touching than what he was going to be throwing. So yeah. I went home and started practicing that night.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, that was about 64. I was taking batting practice in Pittsburgh, and Harry Jupiter, the San Francisco writer, told Alvin Dark that, hey, this Prairie kid's going to hit a home run for you. He said, hell, I'd be a man on the moon before he does. 5 years later, I was on the mound in Candlestick Park pitching against the Dodgers. And we had a moment of silence because the man landed on the moon. Bottom of the inning, hit my first home run. So that was a good story. I hit five more after that, guys. Yeah.
That's Hall of Famer Gaylord Perry addressing the media on Friday before his statue was unveiled on Saturday at AT&T Park in San Francisco. Thanks to our guests today, Rock Kabatko from Masson.com in Baltimore and Jeff Idelson, the president of the National Baseball Hall of Fame. Join us again on Monday. We'll hear from Matt Moore, who will be the starting pitcher for the Giants as they take on the Pittsburgh Pirates. And then on Tuesday, we'll be at AT&T Park in San Francisco podcasting as the Giants take on the Pirates again in Game 2 of that series. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin on the sportsvirus.com and now on cambr.com.